Greetings, everybody. Since we have a small, intimate group, and it's our last presentation of this session, let's make it interactive. If you have questions, feel free to ask. Comments, feel free. So what I'm going to discuss today is whether it's worthwhile to invest in developing a smartphone application-based intervention modality for the purposes of preventing STIs. For this particular project that I'm presenting, we're going to look at promoting HPV vaccine uptake and completion among young adult African-American, hey guys, young adult African-American women between 18 and 26 years of age. Okay? No relationships to disclose. In overview, I'm going to discuss the significance of HPV disease to public health, the cost of building an application, what is the cost-benefit analysis of building a smartphone application-based intervention for STD prevention. I'm going to present study findings from a feasibility study I did in the emergency department where we assessed the willingness of African American women 18 and 26 to partake in a smartphone application-based prevention intervention for HPV. And we're going to evaluate whether or not it's worth it to invest in this technology. Not sure if you're aware of the significance of the HPV poses to public health, specifically African American women. There's a disproportionate burden of disease for African American women with HPV infection. African American women experience HPV infection 50% more than Caucasian American women. That's half, 50% more. There's also a disproportionate burden to the age group, adolescents and young adults. Genital HPV infects 50% of adolescents and adolescents and young adult women, which contributes to 20 million new cases every year here in the U.S. 74% of new HPV cases among women 15 to 24 years account for 48% of sexually transmitted diseases or infections. To me, this is the most striking with the morbidity and mortality. African American women are 2 times more likely to die from cervical cancer than Caucasian American women. That in and of itself for me is enough for us to focus our efforts on preventing disease in this subpopulation. The highest national HPV rate, and again, 2 times more likely to develop cervical cancer. African American women are 2 times more likely to develop cervical cancer amidst an HPV infection. So what that means is if a young adult woman comes into an OBGYN to be treated. Let's say she comes in to get a pap smear. It's abnormal. For African American women, let's say that it's HPV positive. African American women are more likely to have cervical cancer from that incident, that identification of HPV disease. A Caucasian American woman goes in, same thing, HPV infection, it's more likely that it will be caught early so it will not develop to cervical cancer. So we're looking at delayed care, identifying it too late. Of course, that contributes to morbidity and mortality. So how much does it cost to build this smartphone application? Costs quite a bit. The average cost for an application developer, IT person, is $100 an hour. That's the average cost. The average cost of developing an application for a small app, like let's say the APHA app, for instance, that just gives information, it's not a lot of interaction, that's cheaper, $3,000 to $8,000. A more complicated application, recognized brand, more interactive. You put in information, the responses may vary, may be more complicated, $50,000 to $150,000. An iPad app, $12,000 to around $150,000 or more. So given the goal of the research, you want to develop something that's culturally sensitive, something that's interactive, the cost is expected on the lower end to be at least $50,000 to develop the app that I'm speaking of in the feasibility study. $50,000 just for the development of the app, okay? So let's look at how are we going to pay for this. Existing funding mechanisms, I work for the University of Texas, so we have interinstitutional pilot awards. They usually fund $30,000 to about $50,000 for research for a new idea, feasibility. Let's see if this works. $30,000 to $50,000. The NIH level, the NIH has a RO3 mechanism for for pilot and feasibility awards that funds $100,000 over 2 years. So that's $50,000 a year. And we've already estimated on the lower end to build an application costs $50,000 just to build an app. That's not the full funding. In R21, more funding, about $275,000 over 2 years. R21, high risk means this may not work, but you have to convince us that it will. And it's really difficult to make that connection oftentimes when submitting something that's really a pilot or feasibility study. So the limitations, as you can see, there are inherent limitations when thinking of how we're going to fund this. So has anybody ever submitted a grant on a federal or a foundation level grant? You have. So are you familiar with budgets? Okay. So for those of you who aren't familiar in budgets, I'm going to give a crash course. When you submit a budget for funding, you have to include personnel costs. Like for instance, let's say I want to be funded at 15% of my salary. So whatever that amount is, plus fringe benefits. Personnel costs, travel, like to come to APHA and present this research. Our resources for the app development and other supplies, that would be your direct cost for the grant. One of those line items would be for the application development. But universities have something that's called indirect costs. So the way that this goes, let's say it's a private funder. The university charges 30% of the overall cost of the budget.
At least
30% for a private funder. If it's an NIH grant, they charge 50%. Okay, so like let's say your credit card company charges you 10%. The university is charging 50%. So with that said, if you have an overall budget, let's say of $50,000, let's just go with $50,000. That means that the grant would have to fund $100,000 to cover the $50,000 worth of cost. And we've already discussed that the application will cost about $50,000 to develop by itself. That is not personnel, that is not travel, it's none of those things. So with the funding mechanisms that we have in place right now from what I presented, the R21 is the only feasible option right now to develop a smartphone application based upon what I presented, okay? So what will be the benefits? You know, there are limitations with funding, but we want to see if this is worth the cost or the headache of trying to figure out how we're going to pay for it. As discussed, the epidemic among African-American young adult women is astronomical. So this is a new innovative modality that has the potential to significantly decrease the transmission of HPV to uninfected persons. It could significantly decrease the new cervical cancer cases, and significantly decrease the mortality that's caused by cervical cancer. And it also presents an opportunity for real-time information exchange between the individual that's making decisions about their sexuality and the application, real-time information. We don't have anything like that at the present moment. We have text messaging, some online resources, but nothing where there's real-time exchange of information, which allows us to capitalize on the teachable moment. And it has the ability to motivate and influence health behavior change. So what are the costs? I've definitely discussed the cost of building the application plus associated research costs. And we can avert a lot of the healthcare costs that's associated with the treatment of cervical cancer. Here I have it from at 6 months incremental cost all the way to 12 months. So we see a range of $3,800 to almost $31,000 for the cost of treatment of cervical cancer. So by developing something that can prevent cervical cancer, you know, we prevent this cost, we prevent the development of HPV to cervical cancer, to mortality, to death. So I'm going to present some of the findings from the feasibility study that I did in the ED. It was a cross-sectional observational pilot study. We enrolled 41 participants. All were African-American women between 18 and 26 years of age. We had two settings, the online community where we disseminated an online survey, and we did in-person surveys with 19 young ladies in the emergency department. The survey had 30 questions, and we assessed demographics, sexually-based questions, smartphone-based questions like how comfortable are you using your smartphone, and HPV knowledge, how can you contract HPV? Is it skin to skin or, you know, things of that nature? This is some of our frequency analysis. And there were some differences noted between the two groups. The online community tended to be older. We see 42.9% were 24 to 26 years, and 47.4% of the ED population were 20 to 21 years. The online community had, the majority of the online community had a higher income. And the majority of both populations had some college, which we were actually surprised by, some college education. And with contraception use, to me this was really alarming that the majority of both populations did not use contraception. 66.7% of the online community and 78.9% of the ED population. Again, this is a summary of the differences between the two groups. We see that the sexual debut seemed to be lower among the ED population, 16 years versus 18 years. The ED population utilized Medicaid insurance more, and the online community utilized private insurance more. No income was found more prevalent among the ED population. More of the online community reported having a sexually transmitted infection previously. The lack of a consistent sexual partner was more prevalent among the online community. Reporting multiple partners, two sexual partners, was more common among the ED population. Comfort with the smartphone was more, I guess the ED population had more comfort, reported more comfort with using the smartphone, and reported receipt of the HPV vaccine was higher among the ED population. Believe that HPV can be transmitted from skin to skin. That knowledge was higher among the online community. Believe that a smartphone intervention would be effective was pretty high among both populations, 57.9% in the ED population and 61.9% in the online community. Similarly, confirmed willingness to participate, which is the most important thing for my research, was approaching 50% with the ED population and 66.7% with the online community. So the Pearson's chi-square test showed significance only in the ED population in regards to comfort with HPV messages, receipt of the HPV vaccine, and use of contraception. That says the same thing. So, no questions so far? No? Okay.
Did you just
question?
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Did you describe to them what your intervention would look like?
No.
No.
Same question.
Okay. No, we didn't describe it. No. Okay, so in evaluating whether or not the investment is worthwhile. Personally, I think the investment is worthwhile. I'd be interested to hear what you all think. It's innovative. Right now, that seems to be a big word with the NIH and funding mechanisms. How do you make it innovative? And this is something that is relevant. A lot of the research says that a lot of African Americans, young adults, particularly women, utilize the smartphone a lot. So this is not a technology that will require them to go somewhere to be a part of the intervention. It's something that's handheld, something that they have on them at all times, allowing for real-time information exchange. It's relevant, it's culturally relevant. It's something that is easy to use. And the cost, I have here that the cost can be reasonable if you buy down a percent time for an IT developer. For instance, in a proposal that I just submitted, we brought down an IT developer's time at 5%. And we really had to work that, not for the whole year, just for this portion. After we do in-depth interviews and all of that, just for the app development portion, after we've already done a schematic of what we think it should look like, we brought them down at 5%. And it's realistic. The ability to exchange information in real time creates the utility of the teachable moment, whereby the transfer of information designed to inform sexual decisions is properly assessed. I'm going to give you a snapshot of what we're developing now regarding the smartphone application. I don't have the pictures. Can't release them yet, but what we would like to do is to introduce information or be a part of the decision making when a person meets someone. Pee-wee, can you come here for a second? Robert, I call you Pee-wee in front of everybody. Okay, so for instance, if I was meeting Pee-wee at a club, I have the application on my phone. people are texting all the time when they're speaking with other people. So I'm talking to Pee Wee. Okay, so Pee Wee, how old are you?
38.
Okay, so he says, okay, well, we'll go with 38. Let's say he says 38, and I put 38 into my phone. There's different, the application will ask different questions where you can assess risk. So you're 38, okay, so we're talking. Do you have any kids?
Several.
Several, how many?
12.
Okay, you have
I've had a lot of time. You know.
Okay, do they have the same mom?
No.
No, they don't have the same mom. So how many moms?
12.
Wow. So I would put this information into the smartphone application. Yes, he has children. He has multiple children, several different moms. Okay, have you ever been to jail?
12 times.
You've been to jail 12 times? Wow.
I do everything in dozens.
Really, in dozens. Okay. Okay, so I will put that in there. So, you know, have you ever had sex with a man before?
No.
No, never had sex with a man. Okay. Have you ever had sex with a man before? And these questions that I'm asking actually came from an informal survey that I did on Facebook, and these are the questions that these young ladies say that they ask when they meet people. Have you ever had sex with a man before? I was really shocked, but that's what they say they ask. They meet people. It's not what it used to be.
That's the provider for the answer.
I know, right?
Which questions
I wasn't finished with the scenario. I'm almost done. I'm sorry. So after I asked all of those questions, the application will summarize a risk for this person. So with Pee Wee, okay, based upon the risk assessment, Pee Wee has a 73% chance of being a carrier of HIV or STD, HPV specifically for this one. So with that information, am I going to follow up with Pee Wee? I'm going to get his phone number. Am I still going to potentially have sex with Pee Wee?
Yeah.
And we're going to have follow-up questions. So it's going to be a code. It's not going to say Pee Wee. It's going to say whatever the code is for Pee Wee. Did you ever speak to him again? If you say no, that's the end. But if you say yes and you go on a date, we follow up. Did that information of potential risk affect whether or not your sexual decision-making? Did it impact it at all? So that's the way we're going with developing the application. Thank you. Appreciate it. Any questions?
You had a question.
No, I was just curious. Actually, I believe I forgot the question. Oh, yeah, in terms of which questions young ladies asked, mm-hmm. it was a separate data collection.
Attempt. Yes,
so
that was
there's
recent.
There's no linking that between
no.
Online versus, okay, because I was curious to see.
That's an interesting research project for us to do that. Yeah, we can definitely add that, because we still want to do in-depth interviews with these young ladies. This was just a survey. That's going to be based on funding. Going forward.
I have two questions. The income level is extremely low, yet you think they'll have access to smartphones?
Well, we know for sure.
Okay.
Even with low income, there is access to
right.
smartphones. But that was monthly income. That was monthly. That wasn't yearly.
Oh, okay.
That was monthly income.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other question I have is, are you concerned with any liability issues that Pee Wee might come back and sue University of Texas?
My smartphone said he was okay.
Well,
I had sex with him, and now I got a baby in HPV.
Now you're number 13.
Pretty sure I don't want to sign off on that.
No. Number 13.
Lucky number 13. You're in jail again.
Oh, God. No liability, because there will be a code that won't be linked to Pee Wee at all in the application. Just like for the schematic that I have now is he male or female, 1 and 2, you know, something like that to code the person. But no, there's no linking information. I think
it was based on one of the previous slides. The question that you asked, when you said lack consistent sexual partner, what defines whether the partner? I found it interesting that the higher income, higher age group had a higher number of people who lack consistency. So is that because they were not having sex, or because?
So
I was just wondering. Yes, I was wondering
what. The survey didn't ask the question like that. It was something like, have you had more than one sexual partner within a time frame, like 6 months or 12 months? And if so, how many?
Okay.
It was worded that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just curious because I was like, that's interesting. You know,
yeah.
Ahead,
Right.
That number stuck out.
Right.
Thank you.
Any other questions? No? Okay.
Well, thank you.